This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
When Mount Vesuvius erupted in 79 AD, covering the city of Pompeii and the surrounding area with volcanic ash, it was a great tragedy. It also preserved a moment in time from 2,000 years ago that's been excavated and studied now for over 2.5 centuries. This summer, archaeologists such as Jordan Rogers, professor of classics at Carleton College, are back at Pompeii working in many different areas. In the first part of this interview, Jordan began explaining how new, powerful technologies such as the iPad Pro and photogrammetry are creating 3D models that are helping archaeologists see their work in a new way.
You know how archaeology works, right? You dig something up, it's gone. You can't see it in place anymore. What's great about the 3D models is that you can put it back in place, and you can actually compare that point in time with other points in time. So suddenly you can start seeing relationships through time and through your different layers of excavation that you wouldn't have been able to see in person. Not only that, you can also expand that to look at one trench compared to another trench, and suddenly you're seeing relationships between two different adjacent rooms that you really wouldn't be able to see without the model. The 3D model just makes it so easy to retrieve that information.
So as I understand it, this 3D modeling is done with a LiDAR scanner that we've talked about occasionally in the past. So is that standard equipment on an iPad Pro now?
Yeah, so the iPad does have LiDAR, and we will use the iPad to do LiDAR, LiDAR scans and point cloud of shooting its lasers, and it's creating a pretty good texture, high quality 3D model. And so we'll take, usually with those, we'll use the iPad for features, because it does a lot better job at taking not full three dimensions of a space. So sort of imagine a statue bust. It doesn't do a great job of getting all the way around a head, for example. It has a hard time kind of stitching that together. It does a great job in sort of side to side and with a little bit of depth. It does a really good job of that. So we like to use it for features. You take a scan, 30 seconds, takes 15 seconds to process, and you have your 3D model. I mean, it's incredible how quick it is. For the big models, the things that we're creating to basically live as our database, we want them to be so high quality that we're actually using structure for motion photogrammetry, and we're using Agisoft to actually process those models. And so this is for those listening, this structure for motion is basically you're taking hundreds of pictures with a high quality camera, and then you run through Agisoft, it stitches them together in a really high quality textured model that gets you, more or less better visual detail than your eyes can even see in person. Still, the iPad can't do that. It doesn't have the power to do the processing power, or even the camera isn't quite good enough for that yet. But what would be great is if it keeps moving in that direction, because that would be incredible to just use the iPad to do your 3D models that are so high quality that you can use them the way we want to use them.
So you've presented this information at archaeological conferences. What has been the reaction from other archaeologists?
Yeah, so the head of the data initiatives team is Dr. Alex Badigio at Indiana State University. And he presented basically the workflow that he created. So this was kind of his idea as to both using the iPads, but also integrating the 3D model as basically our living database. And so he presented his work there as part of our team at the AIA, the Archaeological Institute of America meetings in New Orleans this past January. I mean, it was a packed room. It's funny because this is how it works. They find the biggest rooms, and then they put the least interesting things there. So there are like 20 people in a room that could fit 150. And it was opposite for this. So it was the tiniest room that I think was maybe available at the conference. And it was absolutely packed. So I think people are excited about it, because we've been making models in archaeology for probably like 5 to 10 years in some projects. Oftentimes these models just live on somebody's hard drive. We make the model and we think, oh, that's really cool, we should do something with it. But no one's really come up with a good workflow to integrate it into our research process in a meaningful way. He talks to the Esri folks pretty frequently, and they have to make new functionality for him because he's really pushing the bounds of what they're able to do. So people have been really interested in it, and he's the type of guy too who every year he's coming up with new things. So he came up with a couple of new things as far as how to capture and new models to the bigger base model in seconds rather than taking days to do this, and he came up with this over the course of the past year. So he's a pretty incredible thinker. I call him a genius. He doesn't like it when I say that, but he really is.
So he's kind of showing the way for other archaeologists. You expect other archaeologists to be using these tools?
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, I'll say, like, so Alex is coming up with all these ideas. And he's actually a New World archaeologist. He works in Oaxaca in Mexico. And so that's where his main work is. I think he wants it to, of course, catch on in his field. But we want it to catch on in classical archaeology. So I think the partnership between him and the director of our project, Dr. Allison Emerson at Tulane, and she's kind of pushing the classical archaeology world forward with this partnership. And so, yeah, I mean, our hope is that people, and we're really open about how it works. You know, we're not trying to protect these ideas as like intellectual property or something. It's better archaeology. We can tell better stories and we can share our information in a much more profound way. So we're hoping, yeah, that it catches on and people want to do it. And I think they do because it's powerful. It allows us to work so much faster.
If you've just tuned in, we're talking with Jordan Rogers, professor of classics at Carleton College. He is in Pompeii, where he's an excavation supervisor this summer. The new technology he's discussing seems so powerful it's bound to be used by archaeologists elsewhere, including sites in Israel related to biblical archaeology.
Yeah, and I'm sure some teams, you know, I'm not particularly familiar with a lot of the projects going on in Israel right now as an Italian archaeologist, but I'm sure a lot of teams are already implementing some degree of the 3D modeling in one way or another. But our hope would be that the 3D modeling as the database, right, is that this sort of integration of visualization and data will become something that people become more interested in, right? Because for us too, you can share that in a way that's much easier for regular people, which is regular people, non-academics, I should say, people who aren't used to reading the jargon of an archaeological field report, for example. Well, I mean, we can use 3D models, visualize things and click buttons, and then we can see the information there and share it so widely. So yeah, hopefully that'll become more and more prominent. And I would hope too that it would go beyond Italian archaeology into other parts of the Mediterranean and of course, other parts of the world too.
We did an interview just the other day with an archaeologist working in Egypt, and it sounded like he was using very similar tools to get that 3D modeling and creating huge data files that took hours to load into the computer. This 3D modeling then, for an average person who's just interested in archaeology at Pompeii or in Egypt or Israel, they get a better visual understanding of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's I think that's the power in it, is actually the visualization. I mean, the data is of course really relevant to what we're trying to do, but I think the visualization part is what is more attractive to most people. We're all used to seeing buildings. we're used to seeing things in three dimensions, whether we're seeing it on TV in person or even for others playing video games or something, right? Our hope too is that we can put some of this stuff in virtual reality and actually have people use something like an Oculus or another VR headset to actually put themselves in the space. I know Alex has been working on some of this stuff with his own work in Oaxaca and actually making these virtual reality learning environments for his classes. And those can be really powerful tools as well for education, which we really hope to push forward. I mean, I love the idea that I can have my students walking through our property, right? And I could show them all the stages of the excavation, and they have their headsets on, and they're in the trench, right? They can see it happening in front of them. That's pretty cool.
I think that's what's happening with similar technology, like using LiDAR, where you have all these millions of data points. You can basically recreate, say, like a tomb or something that somebody can walk through. About this season in Pompeii, as you're working this summer, what have you found so far that's been interesting, either with your excavation or other work that's going on in Pompeii?
So you never know what you're going to find. You never know if it's going to be a zero or a hero. And so this year, you know, in my area, we had one spot that looked pretty clear that it was going to be a zero. We had some drainage that was installed in the 80s or something. The second area that we opened up at the beginning of the season looked pretty promising. It didn't have any evidence of modern contamination. And of course, you go through it, you start excavating, and it's the exact opposite, right? So we have something exciting. I can't talk about it because it's you know, it's in the process still of not only being excavated, but also of us trying to figure it out. Keeping an ear and an eye out, because we'll be publishing this, some of the stuff that we found this season, later in the fall. But it's exciting. And what it does is, this, what we're finding essentially is it's changing the way that that we're thinking about Pompeii in the first century CE. And this is what I was alluding to at the beginning, right? When I was talking about this idea that after the earthquake, suddenly you have industry and houses. Well, what we're finding is actually changing that narrative completely. It's also changing what we can expect in these houses as far as our finds go, the types of preservation that we're getting. It's been good so far. We're getting some exciting finds, and I think it's been better than we even anticipated, which is fantastic.
So how much of the site of Pompeii has been excavated so far?
Yeah, I think like maybe 70% of the site has been cleared of the volcanic material of the 79 eruption, but only like less than 5% has been excavated below that. So it has been excavated exploring the hundreds of years of habitation at the site before 79 CE. The Vesuvian ash from 79 CE in the Lapilli has already been removed from our site. So when you walk into it, you're walking into more or less what it would have been like in 79 CE. We're going below that. So we're trying to figure out what happened in the early empire, late republic, early republic, before Pompeii, of course, was a Roman colony, and even the first habitation of the site. So we have somebody on staff, Mark Robinson. He's really interested in prehistory of Pompeii. So he's always digging. Once we've cleared out all the human stuff that we've got, he gets into the prehistoric soils, and he can find things that you would not believe. his knowledge of soils and shapes is pretty incredible in the Bay of Naples. So yeah, we want to tell the whole story. It's not something that's been done in most of the site. Hopefully more people will start doing that, because there's so much to say about Pompeii as a city before the eruption that deserves to be known about, I think. Those are the stories that we're interested in.
Speaking to us from his quarters near the ruins of Pompeii, that's Jordan Rogers, professor of classics at Carleton College and excavation supervisor at the Pompeii 114 project this summer. Apologies for the quality of the audio, but I hope you enjoyed the immediacy of a report from the site of one of the most famous excavations in all of archaeology. Excavations that have been going on at that site for over 2.5 centuries. I enjoyed learning about the new technology being used and how they're exploring Pompeii's history before the 79 AD eruption of Mount Vesuvius. One of the best ways to keep up to date on the latest developments and discoveries in biblical archaeology is our Biblical Archaeology News magazine, Artifacts. Details and how to subscribe are at our website at radioscribe.com. We're also going to Israel again in November 2024, and you can join us. Details at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.